Okay. So, hi everybody, and welcome back to this lecture series of Parallel Characters in Tanakh. I really appreciate those of you who decided to come back, and I'm really sorry again that I've had to miss last week because I really wasn't feeling very well. So this week we're actually going to be comparing two characters who I think on face value really do seem very similar to each other, Yaakov Avinu and David HaMelech. And before we start, I'd just like to give a quick intro about Yaakov and David. And can everybody, I hope everybody can hear me well and everything. I guess somebody will tell me. But basically, Yaakov and David, we all know, are very famous characters, and they're both famous, really, for being, both in their own way, really founding fathers of Judaism, in a way. Yaakov Avinu is considered the father of our nation. We are known as Bnei Yisrael. And David HaMelech is really the person who started the Malucha. As we know, that it's David's lineage, through David's lineage, that the Mashiach will come, and through David's lineage, that really the Malchut David, or the Malucha, was really established. What's interesting about both of them is that while both of them seem to be kind of trailblazers in their own way, in terms of David setting up the Malucha, the kingship, the kingdom, and Yaakov Avinu putting together what will soon be Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel. Both of them also are preceded by people who actually basically did their job first, right? We have Yaakov, who has his forefathers, both Abraham and Yitzchak, who also basically tried to lead the way to be the leaders of Bnei Yisrael, but it's ultimately the backstop that Yaakov, and Yaakov is the one who's ultimately seen as the one who's responsible for building Bnei Yisrael, as all of his sons become Shivtei Yisrael, and we are known as Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, who is Yaakov. And the same as David HaMelech. David HaMelech isn't the first king of Israel. David HaMelech is really the second king of Israel. But again, the buck stops at David, and we know that it's David's family, through David's lineage, that the monarchy continues, and not through his predecessor, Shaul HaMelech. So I think that that's something that's interesting about both of them when we're both dealing with these two, when we're dealing with these two powerful leaders. And when I was studying for a year in Matan is actually a women's seminary, basically a women's place of learning of higher education in Israel. And I had a very brilliant teacher in Tanakh, and his name is Rav Aviah HaKohen. He lives in Alam Shvut. And one time, I remember him saying, you know, David and Yaakov, they're really the same person. It's really very interesting. They're really the same person. And he said this kind of in passing. And this really stayed with me, and it struck me, because I guess it's something that I hadn't really thought about too much. And that's why I really wanted to present these two, because it really gave me the opportunity to really look into the similarities between Yaakov and between David. And as I was doing some research for this project, I came across a very interesting Rashbam who agrees with what Rav Aviah HaKohen says and links David and Yaakov in a very interesting way. And I want to start off with this Rashbam and show you how the Rashbam links David and Yaakov. And the Rashbam is commenting, actually, on the time immediately before Yaakov meets his enemy or his nemesis, Esav, his brother. And we know, we maybe are familiar with the story of Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov is very scared of Esav because Yaakov essentially stole Esav's blessing, stole the blessing that was meant to be given to Esav. Yaakov dressed up as Esav and he stole it from him. He's been running away from him all this time. Finally, Yaakov has this huge family, he has lots and lots of wealth, and he feels like he's ready and prepared to face Esav. And he splits up his camp into two different groups, and I think maybe most of us are familiar with the story. And something interesting happens. If you can just turn to source number 2. So first we see something interesting. I just brought the beginning of Parak 32, of Parak Lamed and Bereshit. So Yaakov comes to a place. This is before he meets with Esav. So basically, Yaakov is going on his way. He encounters these angels of God, and he calls the place Mahanaim. Very nice. And then we hear the story about how Yaakov prepares to meet with Yosef. And then we have this interesting encounter, and we see that Yaakov prepares to meet with Yosef. He sends, Yaakov prepares to meet with Esav. He sends Esav lots and lots of gifts, trying essentially to bribe Esav to butter him up before he meets him so that Esav won't be too upset. And then we have Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Vayakom balayla hahu, he gets up in the night. Vayitachet stay nasav et stay shifatav. Vayachadah sar yaladav, he takes his wives, his concubines, and his 11 children. Vayavor et ma'avar yabak, and he crosses the ford of Yabak. Vayitachem vayavren et hanachal. Vayaver aserla. Okay, and he takes them and he crosses them over. And then we have this interesting story of how Yaakov fights with a man, and in the end, the angel hurts Yaakov in his Yid Hanaseh, basically in his thigh, and he essentially bestows on Yaakov a new name, and that's why Yaakov is called Yisrael. The Rashbam comments on this interesting encounter, or this interesting incident, where Yaakov gets up in the middle of the night with his entire family, and the Rashbam says something very interesting and different from many of the Parshanim. Many Parshanim see this situation of Vayakom Balayla Hahu, of Yaakov getting up at night. They see this situation more as Yaakov was continuing to travel towards the place that he was going to meet Esav with his family. The Rashbam, though, sees something interesting in this. What does he say? If everyone can turn to source one. Vayakom Balayla Hahu, he gets up at night. Nitzkaven libroach derech acheret, v'lefichach avar hanachav alayla. He decided, he had intended, his intention was to run away through a different way. Therefore, he wants to cross over the nachal at night. Kema shematinu b'David, b'varchom yipnei Avshalom. Just like we see with David, when David is running away from his son Avshalom. I'll just give a quick background here on David and Avshalom. Basically, David had a son, his name was Absalom. Absalom rebelled against David. He came into his palace in Yerushalayim, basically took charge of the palace, and essentially succeeded in driving David out of the palace, and David was running away from him because Absalom was chasing after David to kill him. So, Kamosha Matinu the David Bevarchon Yitzne Absalom, Bidrasim Halalu, So Yaden Umachanaim, Sa'avar Yaakov Ubalaila, K'malken Bayamur al David, Kumu Avru Mehera et Hamayim Begomer. So just like we see that Yaakov also crosses over this brook, we also see with David, Kumu Avru Mehera et Hamayim, that he also goes over the water. Bayakam David Kalaham Asher Itam, he also has this huge group of people that's with him, Bayavru et Hayaden, Ador Habaker, and they also were going across until the light came out, meaning they were also crossing on at night. Until there was nobody left who hadn't crossed over. The David ba machanaim, the Absalom abar hayazen. So, and David comes to machanaim, and Absalom crosses over the Arden. So the Rashbam points out some interesting things. He sees in both stories that Vayakam, just like Yaakov gets up and takes all the people who were with him, so too David also gets up and takes all the people who were with him. He also mentions that this word Avar, Ayin Bet Reish, is mentioned three times during the story of Yaakov crossing over this Nachal, over the Ma'avar, over this brook. And we also see David, Avar, there were three Avars mentioned in the story of David, where David also gets up and crosses over the Yarden. In both cases, what's interesting, which is why I brought Pasuk Gimel in source number two, Yaakov is coming from Machanaim, whereas David, after he crosses over the Yarden, goes towards Machanaim. So Machanaim seems to play a central role in both cases. And the Rashbam sees this, and he draws a parallel, too, between Yaakov and David. And he says, what he's saying, essentially, is that while some Parshanim see Yaakov as just continuing on his way towards meeting Esav, essentially, Yaakov is actually running away. He gets cold feet, and he's running away from Esav. He decides he doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to face his greatest fear. He doesn't want to face his nemesis, Esav. And he decides he's going to run away. Just like David couldn't be contained in his castle anymore. His son drove him out, and he's running away from his son. In both situations, we have people who are running away from close relatives of theirs. Yaakov running away from his brother, and David running away from his son. And what's interesting also in both cases is that we in both cases have this interesting intervention. Or the pasuk kind of stops the story, the Torah kind of stops the story in both episodes of running away, where we see that Yaakov takes his whole entire family and makes them cross over Ma'avar Yabok. Suddenly we see in pasuk Kav Hey, Vayivater Yaakov Levada, Vayavek Ishimo Aralar Hashacha. Suddenly we see this intervention, this man comes in, and he fights with him until the morning. If we go on to source number 3, where I brought the speaking for David running away, we see that also Pasuk Kaf Gimel in the third source, we see kind of a different kind of intervention by the way that the Tanakh does it, but nonetheless it's kind of a break in the story of David running away. What do we see? Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Okay? So the interventions are very different. I'll explain that intervention briefly. David is running away. He's running away from his palace. Meanwhile, what was going on in his palace with Avshalom is that Avshalom was trying to decide how best to run after David. How should he best chase David and eventually overtake him and kill him? And Ahitophel, who used to be David's chief advisor, decided to side with Absalom instead and rebelled against David, and he gives Absalom some very good advice as to how to chase after David. Husai Ha'arki was actually a friend of David's and did stay with David during his time of trouble of running away from Absalom. Husai Ha'arki also goes and tries to convince Absalom to follow his advice, which would essentially be good for David and would hinder Absalom in trying to catch David. The pasuk says before, which I didn't bring, that Hashem decided to intervene and essentially force Absalom to choose Husai Ha'arki's advice, which would not be in his favor, as opposed to Ahitophel's advice. So we see here that this pasuk of Ahitophel seeing and understanding that his etzah, that his advice wasn't going to be held, was not going to be listened to by Absalom, he decides to go and strangle himself and kill himself, taking himself out of the picture, he who was really dangerous to David. We see that this first intervention here, with Hashem intervening by sending this beast to fight with Yaakov, has a very different result. So we also see that where Yaakov fights with this man, basically what the man does is while Yaakov is trying to run away, the man essentially hurts him in the Gid HaNaseh on the leg, essentially forcing Yaakov to face Esav. This is very different in the David story, where Hashem intervenes and essentially saves David's kingdom by killing off this advisor who had been poisonous to David. But David still continues to run away from Absalom. Still though, the Rashbam makes this parallel, seemingly, between Yaakov running away and David running away. And this Rashbam really got me thinking about many, many parallels that we really, really see between Yaakov and David's lives. And I think that what the Rashbam is pointing out to us is that really David and Yaakov both have these kind of pivotal, fleeing scenes, I guess you can call them. We have Yaakov running away from Esau, and we have David running away from Avshalom. And if we can, and it really convinced me and it forced me to look at their lives kind of based on how these fleeing scenes played a role in their lives, how these running away scenes played a role in both of their lives. And if we look at David's life or David's family life preceding his running away and Yaakov's life, family life that comes after his running away, we can really see many parallels. It's interesting, though, that Yaakov's family problems that are parallel to David's family problems come after Yaakov running away from Esau, the running away situation, whereas David's family problems pursued his running away situation. And I'd like to just review them briefly, okay? Basically, we have two people. David HaMelech has a daughter who is raped, Tamar. Basically, the quick version of the story is that David has a child whose name is Amnon. Amnon desires Tamar. He wants to sleep with her. And Amnon essentially is successful in raping Tamar, his sister. And it's a very terrible story. We also know that Yaakov has something terrible happen to him, where Dinah, his daughter, is raped by Shem. Shem is an outsider, someone who's not connected to Yaakov's family, but nonetheless, she still has a daughter who is also raped. In David's family, we see that brothers are fighting, where Avshalom and Amnon, Avshalom, who's another son of David, who we see later rebels against David, fights with his brother Amnon and kills him because of what Amnon did to Tamar. And we also see that in the Yaakov story, we all know, we're familiar with Yaakov's sons fighting with each other, essentially because they're jealous of Yosef, and they, in the end, send Yosef away, which results in him being sold. In both situations, we also have sons sleeping with their father's concubines. Absalom sleeps with David's concubines, and we also have an interesting and very popular and popularly debated passage in the Torah where Reuven also sleeps with Bilhah. There are some commentators who read it as Reuven moving Bilhah's bed away from Yaakov, or moving so that his mother could sleep with Yaakov. That's a very common parshan kind of take. The actual text and the actual pshat of the passage is essentially Vayishkav Reuven et Bilhah Eser Avi Vayishma Yisrael, that Reuven actually sleeps with Bilhah, his father's wife, and Yisrael hears about it and Yaakov hears about it. These three situations, both of them having daughters who are raped, sons who fight with each other against a particular son, which results in either the son being sold or the son being killed, and both of them having sons who sleep with their wives. These are, in my mind, they were very kind of glaring similarities and ones that really need to be paid close attention to. And I think perhaps ones that my rabbi, Rav Aviah HaKohen, was actually talking about. I then delved a little bit more deeply into these similarities and into these scenarios that seemed similar, and I saw that there were a lot of linguistic parallels between many of the stories that I've presented for you over here, and I just want to go over a couple of them, and we can talk about what all this means. Basically, we see on the David side, I have a chart on source number 5, we see on the David side that David is the one who actually sends his daughter Tamar into the danger. He sends Tamar to be essentially raped by Amnon, unbeknownst to him. At the same time as Yaakov, in Perek Lamed Zayin, sends Yosef to his brothers to see what's going on with them, which is essentially sending him into grave danger as well. We also see that when Amnon is, and it's also interesting to see that when Amnon is, I'm gonna take all the comments later, I'm so sorry, I just don't want to lose my train of thought. It's also interesting to see that when Amnon decides that he wants to raise Tamar, when Tamar is finally in his room, Amnon says, "Everybody please leave," everyone sees in Pasuk Tet, "Hatsiu kol ishna alai," "Please everybody leave the room," which reminds us of the words that Yosef uses when Yosef says, everybody leave the room, I have to tell my brother something, which is when he reveals to his brothers who he is. The other thing, so another interesting similarity is that we see also that that Amnon grabs onto Tamar's coat and he says, please sleep with me, similar to the way that Esther Potiphar's wife, grabs onto Yosef's coat and says, please sleep with me. Interestingly enough, also, we have in the Tamar and Amnon story, we see that Tamar wears something that's called a Ktanet Pasim, and the translation we have here in Pasuk Yudchet, she had a garment of many colors upon her. We also know, famously know, that the only other time anybody in the Tanakh is wearing a Ktanet Pasim is Yosef, who wears his Ktanet Pasim that his father made for him. We see also that following the incident of the rape of Amnon and Tamar, we see that Absalom cannot speak to Amnon at all because he hates him. The Pasuk says, Pasuk Chasbet, everyone can see. Belaziber Absalom in Amnon l'neira atav kisana Absalom et Amnon. He hated him. He couldn't speak to him good or bad. Similar to the Pasuk of how the brothers felt about Yosef. They hated him. They couldn't talk to him peaceably at all. And also, the interesting reaction that we see that both fathers have when they hear what's happened to their sons. First, David, when he hears what happened to his son, Amnon, who's been killed, David gets up and he tears his clothing, and he lies on the ground, and also Yaakov tears his clothing, and he mourns for his son. Interestingly enough, we see that at the end of the story of Amnon and Absalom, of Amnon being killed, it actually says at the end of the Pasuk and Pasuk Lametet, ki nicham al Amnon kimet, that he was, actually, David did have some comfort come to him after Amnon had died. Whereas it says for Yaakov, Vayimaem lehit nachem in Pasuk Lamed Hei, that Yaakov refused to be comforted at all. A kind of interesting parallel that is actually opposite in those scenarios. We also see another interesting parallel, which is following David running away. We see him split up, running away from Absalom. We see David splitting his camp into three different groups. Similar, and it reminds us of the fact that before Yaakov, according to the Rashbam, decided to run away from Esav, he splits his camp into two different groups, again as a military tactic, similarly to the way David splits his camp into three groups as a military tactic, should he come upon Absalom. Now, after going through all of these different similarities, and I think there are many more, but these are the ones that I've brought today, between Yaakov and David, I am really convinced that they are parallel characters, but in my mind, I think that they are very complex parallel characters, and it's difficult for me to say exactly what all of this means. They do both have these very unique situations happen to them. There are linguistic parallels in all of the stories that don't necessarily parallel the correct story, but the parallels are nonetheless there. And again, the Rashbam draws in this interesting parallel, which really kind of probed me to look further and deeper into these parallels. And it got me to thinking about biblical parallels on parallel characters in the Bible in general. And I read an interesting article by Rav Yonatan Grossman, who's actually a rabbi at Gishat Zion. And he said something interesting in source 6. He says, the constancy of an analogy between two narratives should be regarded as one of the indicators for establishing the probability of the analogy. Right? So we have to, in order for us to really draw an analogy between two characters, in order to really draw an analogy between two narratives, we have to really have constancy. There has to really be this constant parallels that keep going on and on and on between the two narratives, which I really think are present in our stories between David and Yaakov. He's quoting this. He kind of gets this idea, Rav Yonatan Grossman, from a man named Paul Noble. Paul Noble is actually a professor in Cambridge in the UK. And Paul Noble actually wrote an interesting article called Esav, Tamar, and Joseph criteria for identifying what he calls interbiblical allusions. How will we decide whether or not we're allowed to draw parallels between two characters? And he says something fascinating in his abstract that I'd like everybody just to look on in source 6. Although the importance of interbiblical allusion is now widely recognized, meaning although interbiblical allusion or parallels within the Bible is something that we see regularly and is recognized, there is still some uncertainty about the criteria by which genuine allusions may be distinguished from, say, merely fortuitous resemblances. What he's saying, really, is that sometimes we have allusions which are really clear, as one parallel informs on the other, or one character really informs on the other, and sometimes they're only fortuitous resemblances, meaning sometimes the resemblances are just there by chance. And after going through the resemblances that I see between David and Yaakov, I wasn't necessarily convinced that there was a clear parallel where one character informs or teaches us something about the other, but maybe that really these similarities and these parallels maybe are just there by chance. The two characters, I mean, it was difficult for me to think about. The other characters to be examined before was much clearer for me. We saw that Bilam being similar to Moshe really taught us something about Moshe's character. It threw Moshe in a very, very clear light, and it helped us understand what Moshe's weakness really was. Similarly to Shlomo and Paro HaMelech. Shlomo being compared to Paro HaMelech threw Shlomo into a clear light and helped us understand basically the downfall of Shlomo's Melucha and how far he had actually sunk and why he deserved or why he had to have the Melucha torn away from him or why he was punished in having the Melucha split. Here, though, it's difficult for me to say what Yaakov teaches us really about David, and what David really teaches us about Yaakov, just because the two are similar. But I do have a suggestion that I would like to offer, so I'll offer it. I'll offer it right now. So basically, the idea is that if we look at Yaakov and David themselves, we see that in their before they kind of became who they were, before they became the leaders that they were, we see that both of them have these kinds of deceptive personalities, right? And I think we're all familiar with Yaakov's deception. Yaakov starts off by stealing or deceiving Yitzchak into giving him Esav, what should have been Esav's bracha. We also see that Yaakov deceives Laban by taking his sheep from him. It's a complicated story, but he also deceives Lavan, and the words used there are Vatignov Yaakov at Lev Lavan. He steals his heart by taking so much livestock for himself that he's able to go off on his own and steal Lavan's children, essentially, or family. Yaakov, we know, is that kind of deceptive kind of person. We also know something about Yaakov, that Yaakov was always chasing after leadership. And he was also, up until the point that he meets Esav, is always running away from Esav, who wanted to kill him, basically, for stealing the leadership from him, from stealing the leadership position from him. David is very similar in that way. David knows that the leadership belongs to him, but the whole entire beginning of his life, or as a young boy, he has to be running away from Shaul, and essentially playing these deceptive roles to get himself out of situations. We see David, when David is with Michal, for example, and Shaul hears that David is with Michal and Shaul wants to kill David, David tells Michal, put these trephim, put these kind of idols under the bed and it will look like I'm there and then I'll slip out the window. So he's able to deceive Shaul into thinking that he's there for a little bit longer. A little bit later on, when David is running away, he runs away to a place called Gath, and he pretends to be crazy so that the king, Achish Melech Gath, won't kill him. Again, deceiving Achish Melech Gath, where Achish says, oh, forget it, he's of no importance to me, he doesn't recognize who David really is, and he lets David go and doesn't kill David. Meaning David, in order to save his own skin, he plays this deceptive card often, similarly to the way that Yaakov often plays this deceptive card. And it's something that's within their personalities, and it's something that's very similar about those two. They're both running away. They both act as fugitives for the beginning of their lives. And they also both have to deceive and use deceptive qualities in order to get them to where they are. Save their lives, really. What's interesting, though, is that Yaakov Avinu, he kind of does keep this deceptive personality, and we even see that right after he runs away from Esav, he promises Esav, yeah, yeah, I'll follow you, I'll come right after you, we'll be together again, and he never does. We know he takes his family away somewhere else. Whereas David, in the end of the day, uses his deceptive quality for the worst deception and for the lowest, basest deception that you can ever imagine, which is essentially convincing a man to come back from war to sleep with a woman who David has stolen as his wife. And I'm talking, of course, about Uriah and Bathsheba. When David commits that sin, he's following still on this path of deception, on this path of trickery, but really, really in a very low and terrible and base way that I think most of us understand and believe that David is punished for very severely. And if we go back and we look at the similarities or even the textual similarities between Yaakov and David, I think that the Tanakh is trying to tell us that we should, yes, we should look at Yaakov, we should look at David as a Yaakov-type character. But because of what David did, and because of the way that in the end he used his deceptive quality, and because of the way that he led Uriah into battle so that he could be killed, because of that, his life, which really reflects Yaakov's life, his life turned out for the worst. And let's go back and look over the parallels that we see between Yaakov and David. We see that both of them have daughters who are raped, but David's daughter is raped by his own son, where Yaakov's daughter is raped by somebody outside of the family, something that's perhaps extremely tragic, but not as tragic as the incest that happens within David's family. Again, we have both times, we have brothers who are fighting, but the brothers fight in David's situation and one of them is killed, whereas the brothers who fight in Yaakov's situation, they suggest that they should kill Yosef, but ultimately we know that they decide not to kill Yosef and Yosef is sold. So too with the Bilhah versus Avshalom sleeping with David's concubine story. In David's case, Absalom publicly displays, and he puts a tent on the roof of David's palace, and he sleeps with David's concubine, whereas Reuven sleeps with Bilhah, Yaakov's concubine, and all the Tanakh says is, Vayishma Yisrael, that Yaakov heard about it, but it's definitely true that nobody else knows about it, and even according to most Parshanim, as we've had pointed out over here, many Parshanim even say that it didn't actually really happen, that there was no way that that even could have happened, meaning that the parallels, and that's true about the other parallels as well, the parallels that we see, the parallels do exist, but they are always so much more negative on David's side, and on Yaakov's side, these things happen and they are terrible, but in the end, ultimately, they're not as bad as what happens in David's family. I think what's most interesting is that at the end of both of their lives, we see both men, both leaders on their deathbeds. David is blessing the one son who he's chosen in the end to be king after he's had so many sons rebel against him, so much death in the family, so many terrible things happen. He lies on his deathbed and he instructs Shlomo, his son, to kill yet again another one of his sons, Adoniah. We have Yaakov at the end of his life lying on his deathbed with all of his sons around him, all of the sons who he's chosen as Bnei Israel, and he blesses every single one of them. I think perhaps that what the Tanakh is doing by paralleling these two figures is to show us, firstly, that being a strong leader and a strong figure always takes a toll on family, and that's true. I think everybody would agree with that. But I think also to show us that it's true that both of these leaders had similar qualities, similar personality traits, but because Devi took his personality traits too far, and because he went a step too far, because of the terrible thing that he did with Bathsheba, we have to still envision him as a Yaakov-type figure, and the same things essentially happen to him, but they end up so much worse, and it's that much worse. Yaakov, on the other hand, never goes that far. His deceit and his deception, the way that his personality plays out, never allows him to go that far. And I think that that's maybe what the Tanakh is trying to show us. I'm not 100% sure, and I think this is a project that's important to continue working on. The reason for the striking parallels between David and Yaakov. But I do think that it is really perhaps because David's enormous sin brought him down. And I think that that's what the Tanakh is trying to show us, is that we can only really get away with so much. Just to go back quickly, we can see also that what's interesting essentially about God's intervention in both of their fleeing cases or in both of their running away cases, we see that God intervenes with Yaakov and he forces him to face his enemy. He forces him to go through with it. He forces him to face Esau by literally holding him back by his leg, by hurting his leg and by giving him a new name. He forces him to face Esau, and with that, Yaakov becomes a stronger person, gets a new name, Yisrael, and he's able to move forward. David, on the other hand, we see that Hashem saves the Malucha for him by killing off Ahitophel, but it's really only the skeleton of the Malucha, meaning what's inside the Malucha and David's family life has ultimately been completely destroyed. And if anyone has any ideas or anything that they'd like to offer, any comments that they'd like to offer about how Yaakov's life sheds light, perhaps, on David's life, I'm open to hearing about it. I kind of told you my take on it, and I hope you've learned something today, something interesting maybe, about parallel biblical characters. And I hope that you'll continue to kind of find your own parallels between the biblical characters and between different characters that we see in Tanakh, but always remembering that one of the most important criteria is that there must be a reason for the parallels to happen, and it doesn't just happen by chance, but there is a reason why these parallels happen, and the parallels shed light on each other, meaning characters are strengthened because of the parallels. The way that characters are portrayed are strengthened because of the parallels that we see in Tanakh. So thank you very much for coming tonight, and I hope you all have a good night. If you'd like, I'll be around for a little longer, and you can ask questions or whatever you'd like. Thanks so much. Have a good night.